So they come after people like me and like Brother Andre and G.C. Dilsaver and Joseph Pierce and Cesare and the Bowl. In this instance, but they don't police their own. And that's what Joe Doyle is here to talk to us about here. And again, Joe is the president of the Catholic Action League of Massachusetts. And it's always a pleasure to get Joe on the program, especially on a Monday to get our week started and to have our logical thinking guided and directed in the proper direction. Hi, Joe. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Mike. Nice to be here.
So, you heard the introduction last Thursday or Wednesday or so. You sent a press release out about some pro-abort candidates being welcomed again into a KFC hall to raise funds and have a campaign event. What can you tell us?
Well, it wasn't to raise funds. It was to participate, to speak at a night. It was worse. It was to actually participate and speak at a Knights of Columbus event. You know, the event with Marty Walsh, the mayor of Boston, who you pointed out is fanatically pro-abortion, who said he wanted to turn Boston into a sanctuary city for abortion should Roe versus Wade be overturned. That was a case where they rented their hall, which again is prohibited by both state and national rules of the Knights of Columbus of renting facilities to supporters of abortion. But this was actually worse. You have a council. Andover Council 1078 in the town of Andover, Massachusetts, and they have an annual event called the Torchbearers Award, where they give out, they have a banquet, and they give out awards for people who have served their community. And they allowed a representative, Tram Nguyen, to come and speak at the event, and there's actually pictures of her speaking at the podium, surrounded by members of the Knights of Columbus at this annual ceremony. And Representative Nguyen was actually endorsed, believe it or not, for state representative by Barack Obama, by Hillary Clinton, by Massachusetts Attorney General Maura Healey, by Democratic Congressman Seth Moulton. She was endorsed by Emily's List, the pro-abortion National Political Action Committee. She was endorsed by NARAL, Pro-Choice Massachusetts. Planned Parenthood, the Planned Parenthood Advocacy Fund of Massachusetts, actually put out a press release announcing their endorsement of her. And she was also endorsed by the homosexual group Bay State Stonewall Democrats and by the militantly secular group People for the American Way. And she's a co-sponsor of this infamous Roe Act, which is another one of these extreme abortion measures, which will also essentially promote infanticide by removing protections for unborn children that survive abortion. And she's listed as an ally in their official ratings by the Planned Parenthood of Massachusetts, and received a zero rating from Massachusetts Citizens for Life. And she was also the co-sponsor of a ban on reparative therapy, which would be attempting to cure those suffering from same-sex attraction. And her campaign was very unusual. It was a state rep campaign, but it was nationally funded, where she heavily outspent her opponent. And that opponent was former four-term state representative James J. Lyons, a Republican of Andover, who was one of the most outspoken pro-life legislators. So this was a case where national Democrats came into a state rep fight to get rid of one of the strongest pro-life voices in the Massachusetts legislature. So this was kind of like a targeted political assassination. And the Knights of Columbus invited her to speak at their event. This is astonishing. You know, this is the KSC does this all the time. If something happens once, Mike, it's a scandal.
Right.
If it happens more than once, it's really a betrayal. But if it happens all the time, it's a confidence game. And we really have to ask ourselves about the confidence game that the Knights of Columbus, at least in Massachusetts, is engaged in. You know, they have this 2017 resolution from their Supreme Convention, which says that we reaffirm our longstanding policies of not inviting any Knights of Columbus event persons, especially public officials or candidates for public office, who do not support legal protection of unborn children, and that we prohibit such persons from speaking at Knights of Columbus events. But again, and they also prohibit them from renting facilities from the Knights of Columbus. But again, this really, really happens all the time. And of course, the in 2003, the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, in their statement, Catholics in Political Life, also enjoined that, quote, the Catholic community and Catholic institutions should not honor those who act in defiance of our fundamental moral principles, and they should not be given awards, honors, or platforms. Platforms, that is, speaking platforms, which would suggest support for their actions. So this was really another callous betrayal of the pro-life cause by these kind of clueless cultural conformists who comprise America's largest Catholic drinking society. You know, this is after this happening so many times over so many years, I'm beginning to think maybe the Knights of Columbus should simply stop pretending to be pro-life. You know, when an organization has paper prohibitions against certain offensive practices, yet those people who engage in these practices, they're never held to account. There's never any consequences for their actions. But I think reasonable people might logically conclude that the leaders of the organization really aren't serious about their professed principles. And, you know, the Knights, in some ways, you know, at the top, they're an insurance corporation which gives out six- and seven-figure salaries. At the bottom, it's a kind of a social club fueled by inexpensive alcohol. And for those in between, it's a kind of vanity for mediocrities whose idea of being a Catholic is to, you know, dress up in robes and acquire some pretentious title and have their photograph taken with an auxiliary bishop. It's really a scandal. The Knights, they're very sociable, they're very respectable, they're charitable in a completely uncontroversial and kind of humanitarian sort of way, but they'll never convert America to the Catholic faith, and they can never, ever be relied upon in, you know, really the great moral struggles of our time. And I don't think any pro-life Catholic should really waste his time with them. And, you know, one of the responses I got to this news release, Mike, was from the woman who heads 40 Days for Life, in Massachusetts.
Okay.
And she described how fruitless, the word she used was fruitless, how fruitless it was trying to engage the Knights of Columbus here in Massachusetts to do something to support 40 Days for Life. So this is really a scandal. And again, you know, to watch them or to read their literature, to read their website, to listen to them boast, you know, they're in the front lines of all these struggles. But in here, they've been really essentially absent without leave.
Well, and the tragedy, there's an equal tragedy here, and that is that they use the term knight. So yeah. Any of the rest of us that use the term knight properly now, oh, you mean like Knight of Columbus, someone might ask. No, we're the Contra Knight of Columbus, even though I am a knight. I mean, Joe, I did the Third Order back in the 90s. I am a knight.
Yeah. Yeah, knight implies militancy, but it doesn't apply. It implies militancy. It doesn't imply cowardice. It doesn't imply evasion. It doesn't imply constant indifference to the suffering of others. And it's really, really, they're the least militant Catholic group I've ever encountered. And I mean, and this is, you know, there's been a long history of this. Again, I don't want to paint too broad a brush. I don't want to, simply defame people in other jurisdictions. But here in Massachusetts, it's just been a disgrace. I remember at Council 120 in Jamaica Plain, this is many, many years ago, brought in a non-Catholic as a member. And the non-Catholic was a pro-abort running for a local office, and he was the beneficiary. He was the customer of the Grand Knights printing business. I also remember many years ago another council in 1308 in Rosendale. The person I worked with, the man I worked with, the late state representative Jim Craven, who was the one of the strongest pro-life. He was the chairman of the Democratic City Committee in Boston. He was a conservative Democrat, one of the strongest pro-lifers in the history of the Massachusetts legislature, the actual author of the guy who actually drafted the famous Doyle-Flynn Amendment, which cut off public funding for abortion. And he spoke at a Knights of Columbus event in Roslindale in Boston. And the Grand Knight and the Deputy Grand Knight came up to him afterwards and said, you know, Jimmy, we really love you, but we wish you'd lay off all this pro-life stuff. And he was absolutely astonished. And he said, what do you mean? Why should I do that? He said, well, now this is the Grand Knight and the Deputy Grand Knight. They said, well, Jimmy, when a guy gets a girl in trouble, he has to have options. Yeah? So this is here's a Catholic state representative speaking at a Catholic organization, and the leaders of that organization tell him a guy has to have options if he gets a girl in trouble. And, so this is the extent of their pro-life beliefs.
And what you also may not know, Joe, what listeners may not know about the Knights of Columbus, is that prior to the modern method of purchasing insurances, which you get them through your employer or what have you, Knights of Columbus are one of the biggest insurance companies in the entire United States, but it was a mutual, so it was good, right?
Yeah. Now it's a it's just astonishing. When we fought Domestic Partners, in Boston 20 years ago, we had a famous lawsuit, Connors versus the City of Boston, which actually overturned the late Mayor Thomas Menino's unlawful domestic partner benefits program. And we actually had the judge that would later write the same-sex marriage decision, the state Supreme Court justice, Margaret Marshall, actually wrote this decision and said it was unlawful to, unilaterally for the mayor of Boston without approval of the legislature, institute domestic partners. And we invited the state deputy, I think it was actually the state secretary at the time, he was about to become state deputy, who lived in Boston, to be one of the plaintiffs in the case. And he said yes. And then the next day he called me, and he said, well, he's been talking it over with his wife, and if he became a plaintiff in this case, it might hurt his business in the gay community. And he dropped out. So this is the kind of thing, and of course we have these time and time again. We have cases where they rent their facilities to pro-aborts, or they invite these pro-abortion politicians into their councils in violation of their own, again, explicit prohibitions. So how are we to take them seriously? Again, if this happens time and time and time again.
And Joe said this, so I just want to reiterate this, guys that are listening out there. This is not a blanket accusation against the organization known as the Knights of Columbus. These are specific to these cases in Massachusetts where Joe has been documenting them. But I can tell you, though, that the rot has spread, because you will remember back in 2014, I want to say, in Petersburg, Virginia, Knights of Columbus, that the Democrat former campaign stooge for Bill Clinton and pro-abort, Terry McAuliffe, actually did a fundraiser at a KFC hall in Petersburg, Virginia, and a speaking event. And there were knights from all over. I was one of them. Signed up a letter. You probably signed it, Joe. Asking the Petersburg, Virginia Knights of Columbus to not allow this event to occur, and it did. Do you remember that?
I remember it vaguely. This is the other thing. When these individual councils do something which is offensive and which is against their own rules and against the good of their own order, When appeals are made to the state council or to the Supreme Council, nothing happens, which is, again, a sign. We were told with the sexual abuse crisis in the church, the homosexual molestation crisis in the church, then there's always incidents of corruption in any organization, but when an institution is incapable of reforming itself, it may be judged to be institutionally corrupt. And the evidence we've seen, again, at least here in Massachusetts with the Knights, is the Knights are institutionally corrupt, because whenever you attempt to call attention to someone in authority of the Knights that some scandal has taken place or is about to take place, nothing has happened. In fact, in some cases, they end up protecting the individuals that perpetrate the scandal. Like, a perfect example is what happened with Boston Mayor Marty Walsh back in November, where he again rented the facilities at one of the largest Knights of Columbus councils in Massachusetts, the Charlestown Council in the Charlestown District of Boston. And people ended up calling the Massachusetts State Council in Norwood, urging them to put a stop to this. And the State Council's response was to lie to all the faithful Catholics, to all the Orthodox Catholics, and all the pro-lifers that called, and try to tell this kind of dog ate the homework lie that the KFC doesn't control its own property rentals. And they said that some other group called the Building Association does. Now, anybody familiar with the Knights of Columbus knows that when you join the Knights of Columbus Council, you also join their Building Association. And when they have the annual election, the annual meeting, where they elect the officers of the Knights of Columbus, they also elect the trustees of the Building Association. So this is, of course, a distinction without a difference. And the State Council actually told people, oh, no, we have No, they had no control over the rent to the rental to Mayor Walsh. And this is a complete, you know, this is again a churlish and childish fabrication. It's a complete lie. So, and this is the reaction we get from the state council, which should be supervising these local councils and which should be enforcing Knights of Columbus, should be enforcing Catholic principles and Knights of Columbus policies, and they don't, and they protect the offenders.
Now,
I think, again, it's fair to say that in Massachusetts, at least, the Knights of Columbus are institutionally corrupt.
Now, I copied you on my letter. I know you saw it. I was one of the people that wrote a letter to the state of Massachusetts, Knights KFC, asking them to not allow Mayor Walsh to rent that hall and speak there. I didn't get a response. I didn't even get a form letter response. So, and I identified myself with my chapter of who I was and told them of my concerns. So I tend to think that your assertion about the corruption at an institutional level is correct. Joe Doyle is the president of the Catholic Action League of Massachusetts. He's also spokesman of the Friends of the St. Benedict Center. Joe, yesterday your press release was only 11% of Catholics oppose abortion in all cases. This is an election year. The Catholic vote is going to be important. For the first time since, I believe, John F. Kennedy, a Republican candidate, namely Donald Trump, won a plurality of Catholic Catholic voters. The Catholic vote is going to be important. There's no denying that President Trump is the most pro-life president in the history of these United States. So this is going to be a campaign issue. This is shocking news because if you win the Catholic vote, you're going to win the election. Because the numbers are there. So tell me about this survey.
What happened is between the January 28th and February 4th, Real Clear Politics, you don't have the website on everything political in the U.S., Real Clear Politics, its research arm, which is Real Clear Opinion Research, conducted an online survey on behalf of EWTN News, you know, Eternal Word Television Network News, of adult Catholics who were registered voters in the United States, and they conducted it in both English and Spanish. I think it was the selected sample was only about 1,500 people, but they assert that it has a 95% confidence rate. And what they discovered was only 18% of people who identify as Catholics, at least who were registered voters who identify as Catholics, believe in all that the Church holds and teaches, which means the number of you know actual Catholics is much lower than we'd think, and only 11% of people who identify as Catholics in the U.S. who are registered voters believe that the killing of preborn children should be illegal in all circumstances. Let me just repeat that. Only 11% of identified Catholic voters in the United States believe that the killing of preborn children in abortion should be illegal in all circumstances. Basically, one-tenth of Catholics.
Wow.
20%, one-fifth, twice that number, believe that abortion should always be legal. And 53% reject the reality that abortion is intrinsically evil. Now, again, this was released on the 25th of February based on the survey done at the end of January, the beginning of February. Now, as you know, the Church has condemned procured abortion since the first century. In modern times, Pius XI and Casti Canubi said it was the direct murder of the innocent. The Second Vatican Ecumenical Council declared that abortion and infanticide are abominable crimes. And, of course, in Catholic tradition, the willful murder of the innocent is the first of the four sins which cry out to heaven for vengeance. We should also point out that Canon 751 of the Code of Canon Law, which is also reflected in the Catechism, states that heresy is the obstinate denial or obstinate doubt after the reception of baptism of some truth which is to be believed by divine and Catholic faith. So you're in heresy if you simply deny one Catholic truth, and the idea that you can kill with impunity an innocent unborn child is certainly not only a scandal and a crime. It's also an heretical denial of the Catholic faith. Now, if these poll results are accurate, and we suspect they are, then this really represents an appalling rejection of divine and natural law, regarding the inviolable sanctity and the intrinsic dignity of innocent human life by the overwhelming majority of baptized Catholics in America. And this poll really, Mike, it's consistent with the findings of other surveys of Catholic opinion.
Well, the Pew Research Center survey. This is exactly what the Pew Research Center found, too.
Right, and others, and it means that the most self-identifying Catholics, repudiate perennial church teaching. They embrace heresy. They embrace what Saint John Paul II called the culture of death, and they're really quite callously and culpably indifferent to the cruel slaughter of unborn children through surgical dismemberment, and saline scalding, and vacuum suctioning, and now, of course, the preferred method through chemical poisoning. With so-called medical abortions as opposed to surgical abortions. And I think the poll really tells us all we need to know about the religious fidelity and the moral integrity and the Christian sensibilities or lack thereof of Catholics in the U.S., and it demonstrates the crime of abortion encompasses not only the mass murder of the innocent, but really the moral depravity of most baptized Catholics. This is a contumacious rebellion against the author of life, and I think it's really a compelling evidence of the absolutely catastrophic failure of the conciliar experiment in opening the church to the modern world. We were told we're going to have the new springtime of the church. Well, look at the results. And there's no secular solution to this tragedy. I think the only way forward really is the reform of the church and the lives of its clergy, of its hierarchy, of its religious, and the full restoration of the traditional Catholic faith in its doctrine and its discipline, and I think particularly in its liturgy, and the revival of traditional Catholic family life, which is open to life and which is not corrupted by the moral turpitude of contraception, of abortion, of divorce, and of sins of impurity against nature.
Joe, let's think about the term contraception. And I wrote this note to myself to talk to you about this. Contraception is a sum of two words, contra from the Latin, against or opposed, and conception, meaning to conceive children. So it is against conception. Look, we don't even have to be Catholics or Christians to oppose this and to identify what it is. This is an aberration against nature. Nature is at stake here, right?
President Teddy Roosevelt, who was not a Catholic, said birth control was morally depraved.
It is.
All Christian churches opposed birth control, contraception, until the 1930 Lambeth Conference, where the Anglican Communion in 1930, which had condemned, by the way, contraception 10 years before in 1920, the Anglican Communion in 1930 began to defect on the issue. And once again, it was this very, very kind of limited opening where it only would apply just to married people under certain circumstances. And of course, once the crack in the dam was made, then the whole edifice collapsed, and basically all mainline Protestant churches ended up endorsing contraception, but they were opposed.
But one
of the myths about modern Irish history is that when Ireland became independent, it imposed this Catholic sectarian view of contraception on the country. When the laws against birth control were passed in Ireland in the 1920s, every Protestant church supported them.
Yes.
Every one of them. It was universal. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, let's shine a little good news on this conversation here. Joe, you are intimately familiar with the Sisters of the Slaves to the Immaculate Heart of Mary in Still River, right down the road from where you are in Boston. I'd like for you to know, and I don't know if you know this, but please report this, that three of the sisters came here to the New Orleans area last week and conducted a five-day long retreat camp for girls. The girls couldn't be over 16, so it was girls up to age 16. And the sisters conducted a religious retreat where they learned about vocations, about the religious life. They learned some of the issues of the faith. They learned about modesty and immodesty. They learned about life issues. Now, this is the sisters getting out into the world and communicating with laity here in a most impressive and wonderful fashion. And I encourage all of you to contact the Sisters of Still River or the Sisters at Our Lady of Ephesus in Gower, or wherever their sisters are. And this is what Joe was talking about, this revival here. We can do this. We don't have to wait for leaders to do this. But the sisters are out there and willing to do this. And I know that you know them, so I just wanted to share that news with you.
And good for them. And, of course, this is something that they would never have at their own parish church. This is something that they would never have from the kind of the large mainstream religious orders. And it's really just wonderful to look at what the sisters are doing, because, you know, we've had among, again, the more established religious orders, a complete collapse of a vocational activity. And you've seen, you know, more than two-thirds of the American nuns that went from, you know, over 180,000 in the 1960s to less than 60,000. Today, two-thirds were lost. And the average age in some cases is approaching 75.
Right.
So, I don't understand what's happened in the church. You know, it took about 6 weeks for the executives of the Coca-Cola Corporation to realize the new Coke wasn't working, and they had to bring back Coca-Cola Classic. But we've had, you know, 55 years of collapse and implosion and decline, and the leaders of the church still can't figure out that, you know, Catholicism light really isn't working. And we need to bring back the traditional faith in its integrity. So good for the sisters.
It's fantastic. So, Joe, I would like to, I know you got to go and we're out of time, but I would like to invite you back on March the 17th, which is kind of becoming an annual for you, appear on the show. Let's talk about the Sisters of Still River, who now no longer participate on March the 17th, we will, who now no longer participate in the what used to be the wonderful celebration of Catholicity in Boston, the annual St. Patrick's Day parade. And they even wrote this wonderful song about it, you know, lamenting the fact that they won't participate in it. So I'd like to invite you back on the 17th.
I'll be happy to, in anticipation of that, happy St. Patrick's Day, Michael.
Okay. Here's Joe. How can folks contact the Catholic Action League and also the Friends of the St. Benedict Center?
Well, you can, for the Catholic Action League, you can contact us. You go to www.catholicactionleague.org, and you can, or Gmail us at catholicactionleague@gmail.com. Or they can call us at 617-524-6309. That's 617-524-6309. And for the Friends of the St. Benedict Center, you can go to their website, which is fosb.org, or contact them at the Friends of the SBC. That's the Friends of the SBC at gmail.com.
And of course, all of us here on the Crusade Channel, and that surprisingly, Jonas, might warm your heart as well, includes many evangelical and Protestant friends that support the center and its work and are appalled at what the Bishop of Manchester has allowed to be done by Father DeLayer, or the Father the Liar, to brother.
Did you hear the latest, by the way, about Father DeLayer? This is the controversial canonist who is doing so much to persecute the St. Benedict Center. It looks like that. It looks as though Joe Biden received Holy Communion in his parish just before the New Hampshire primary.
I did not hear that. Not surprising, though, is it?
Yeah, and this, by the way, Joe Biden was the chairman of the Judiciary Committee when Robert Bork was defeated. And Bork would have been he and Ted Kennedy were the two men responsible. And Bork would have been the fifth vote to overturn Roe versus Wade. So how many tens of millions of abortions have occurred because of the late Edward Kennedy and because of Joe Biden? So this is just, this evil man ends up, who has no principles, who betrayed the faith of his baptism, ends up receiving Holy Communion at Father DeLayer's parish, reportedly. Yet this is the same fellow that wants to shut down the St. Benedict Center for being faithful to traditional Catholic beliefs.
So there you go.
Appalling.
It is appalling.
Yeah.
Okay, Joe Doyle. Joe, thank you for your time, as always, and God bless you.
Thanks, Mike. Good luck.
All right, you're very welcome.